Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to today's Football Times with me, Aidan Williams, where today we'll be delving into the troubles of the blue half of Merseyside, where Everton are currently a team in a bit of a rut. Repeated managerial changes, confused recruitment, and are sitting currently only a handful of points above the drop zone, and a fate that hasn't befallen an Everton side since 1951. Matt Jones is joining us today. He's the host and director of the Blue Room podcast, which is the most listened to Everton podcast with subscribers across the globe. He's a lifelong Evertonian. He's been heard on Radio 5 Live. He's been on BBC Northwest and also Football Focus, offering his informed and articulate opinions on all things Everton. And now he's here with us on These Football Times, which I'm sure is the pinnacle. Evening, Matt. How are you doing?
Ethan, yeah, quite an introduction. I didn't know I'd been on half those things myself. So so wonderful. But no, I really appreciate being asked on, albeit it is a bit of a negative topic at the moment, of course, when it comes to the toppies.
Yeah, sorry for that. But I'm sure it'll be a little therapeutic, possibly. And we've got another blue to share the pain with you. We've got our resident toffees fan, Paul McFarlane. Evening, Paul. How are you doing?
I could be doing better, Aidan, given the state of the table at the moment, and given Everton's current plight, which I think Matt's given quite a keen outline on there. But yeah, I mean, glad once again to have the opportunity to talk Everton. One time, I hope I'm invited onto this show and I can talk about our challenge for the league title, but I guess that's not going to happen for a while, is it?
Well, you know, there's always the championship.
No, there's not. No.
Okay, then. Well, let's see how it goes with the discussion, and hopefully it's not too painful. But Everton's motto, then, nil satis nisi optimum, nothing but the best is good enough, if I'm translating that correctly. But at the moment, Everton are in big trouble. Even they obviously won their last Premier League game, as I well know as a Newcastle man, in rather dramatic circumstances. But the positivity of that win, as well as the manner of it, seems to have instantly been lost to me anyway, within a few days. With the 4-0 FA Cup loss at Crystal Palace, that seems to have set the mood right back to where it was pre-Newcastle game, to my mind. Anyway, this is all off the back of a string of poor performances as a result prior to that. You know, the 5-0 loss at Spurs being, I guess, the biggest in amongst that, and the deflating home loss to Wolves, where the sort of silence at the end was rather telling. Before we get into the many issues, then, to start us off, Matt, has that positivity gone, the galvanizing effect of the Newcastle win? It seemed so restorative at the time. You know, Paul posted all sorts of clips of the joyous celebrations afterwards, and I was watching it as well, slightly disappointed for my own side. But you know, you could see the positivity. It felt like a change. Has that all now been destroyed because of the manner of the Crystal Palace loss, even before it's had the chance to gather momentum?
I think it's hard to say for certain either way, yeah. And I think the reason why is because that Palace game, of course, was away from home. It was in a different competition. And it was one bookend of an international break, effectively. And Everton returned from that international break, obviously this weekend, with away games against West Ham, which is going to be tough, and against Burnley, which is going to be tough, and is also very important given the position they are in the league. And I think I was down at Selhurst Park for that game on that Sunday, one of the idiots who got up at 4 in the morning to get a coach down there, full well known that Everton were probably going to get levered. And I think what was quite telling for me at the end of the game was that Frank Lampard came over to the away fans, or what was left of the away fans in that end of the ground, and he was trying to G up the fans. He had to say, you know, come on, you know, be positive. And a lot of the people in the ground, you know, understandably told them where to go at that point, because I think a lot of people had seen enough in regards to the performance that day, probably a bit tired, having got up so early. I just wanted to get home, really, and I'd seen it all before from Everton's point of view. So it felt like he was trying to still harness a bit of positivity that may have lingered from that Newcastle game. But in the same breath, being in that away end, it didn't really feel like there was anything left. And we sort of keep getting to this point with Everton over the course of the season where you think, well, that's the lowest point. This is the nadir. And they keep going further and further and further down. And it's going to be difficult. West Ham's going to be difficult at Burnley. But I think the only way we'll really know whether that positivity is still there and whether that momentum is still there is when we're back at Goodison Park on April the 9th against Manchester United. And it's also going to depend, obviously, on how the two results go in those two away games coming up.
Did Frank Lampard's words afterwards, when he was essentially questioning the character of the players, I mean, he basically, well, to put it bluntly, he said they lack the bollocks for the fight. You could look at that, and either you could see a manager who's trying to rally his squad or, you know, trying to reach for any tool in the box. But to me, as an outsider, admittedly, it smacked a little bit more of desperation and deflection. What's your perspective, Matt, on that?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, to be honest. I think it's sort of what you want to hear on the way home from a 4-0 loss, isn't it? You know, you feel angry at the players and you want somebody else to say, there's somebody associated with the football club to say what you're seeing effectively. But I think what's been interesting is that I think before the game against, it may have even been Newcastle, if not the match before, Lampard was very vociferous in saying that these lads all care. Honestly, you know, despite what you Evertonians have seen with your own eyes over the past months and years of these players giving up and throwing in the towel and not showing the right application, from what I've seen so far, they do. And for him to change tact from that point of view to the point of view he obviously brought out after Crystal Palace, I think is quite telling. And it's the sort of thing you tend to get this when a manager's been in a club for about a year and a half, and things are starting to unravel. And he's tried different tactics. He's tried different ways of leading, if you will. And it's sort of getting a little bit desperate. It doesn't really happen 10 games into a tenure when you're trying to stay up. And one of the things he's been trying to do himself is be positive. And I think I didn't necessarily mind him doing it, but I think my only concern with it is that, I'm sure Paul will be able to elaborate on this as well, is that over the last few weeks, there's been a sense from the club and a sense from various fans and fan groups online that, you know, as much as we don't like a lot of these lads who are wearing blue at the moment, as much as we don't like a lot of the people in the boardroom at the moment, we need to leave our grievances at the door at Goodison Park, because if we don't, and we don't get behind these lads, they've shown that they can't pass a football straight without 40,000 Evertonians telling them what to do. So we need to get behind them if we want to stay in this league. And I think that's sort of something that has been there at Goodison Park over the last few weeks. But I'm not sure if Lampard, by coming out and saying the players have got no bollocks, maybe undermines that a little bit. You know, can you come out and say, let's all be together on this, let's all rally behind these players? When fans will go, well, hang on, you said last week that these lads haven't got any bollocks to play for us, why should we get behind these? And I think that's where it becomes a little bit tricky, but these are all symptoms of the terrible position Everton are in at the moment. And I suppose, as is the case with the positivity from that Newcastle game, the proof is ultimately going to be in the pudding when Everton play West Ham this weekend.
Paul, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think Matt summarised the situation very articulately there. I can't really disagree with anything that he said. I mean, it's quite interesting, kind of the Frank Lampard reaction at the moment, because I think, you know, all Evertonians want to get behind Frank. You know, we want to do well at the club. I think he's given a tremendous reception when he first started here. I do like the fact that at the end of every game, he comes over and tries to clap the fans at least, which the previous manager never did once during his tenure at Goodison. I'm starting to see, and I hope I'm completely wrong here, worrying parallels with Mike Walker when he first starts at Everton. Now, this is way before match time, I know. But 93-94, when Mike Walker's appointed, one of his first comments was, I can improve these players by 10%. I can make them 10% better. And looking at what he did to the club, obviously that backfired completely. Similarly to Frank Lampard, his first game in charge was, we beat Swindon Town 6-2. In a superb display of football. And everyone, great, we're on the up now. We then proceeded to lose a whole string of games afterwards. And before we knew where we were in the bottom three. And if it wasn't for Hans Seeger's poor display and goal on that day, you know, we could have gone down that season. So, yeah, I'm seeing worrying parallels there. I think as well, for Lampard's point of view, I'm kind of hoping that maybe... Now he's had time to assess the squad. He's starting to realise this is nowhere as good as he thought it might have been when he inherited the team. Maybe the initial strategy was to build the confidence up because he felt that, you know, the confidence was lacking badly. But now maybe he's got to a stage where he thinks, well, building the confidence up hasn't worked. Maybe I need to start kicking a few backsides. And I think a few hours from, the majority of our fans would agree that a number of players have been earning a lot of money for a number of years at Goodison without actually turning the performances those salaries have justified. So I didn't have any objections to him coming out with that after the game. But if you're going into a relegation battle, which we are, you need everyone to almost have a seized mentality of us against the world rather than the manager against us against the fans. I think that that needs addressing to some extent as well, because as Matt outlined there, our form at Goodison Park, I think, is what's going to keep us up this season. I mean, if you look at the past sort of 4 to 5 seasons, I think last season, 29 points kept you up. The previous 3 seasons, 35 points kept you up. Everton's got 26 points at the moment. So realistically, if they get to 35 points, that should, hopefully, fingers crossed, get them over the line. So that the fate's still in their own control. And that those home games at Goodison Park are going to be massively important. The Man United game coming up, we're without Donny van de Beek for that because he's on loan from United. But on the plus side, I think Alan's suspension is finished by that game, so he's able to play again. But on the negative side, there's rumours of Fabian Delph might be fit for that game, so I'm not quite sure which way we're going to go with that one. But what I would say is I think we need to come to that home game off the back of at least a draw at either Burnley or West Ham. And as Matt outlined there, that Burnley game is crucial. We cannot afford to drop points to one of our rivals. And the key in the relegation battle always is, if you can take points off the teams closest to you, if you prevent them from closing the gap, that can often be the thing that will keep you up. So the Burnley game is absolutely massive from Everton's point of view. And I think if that Man United game, if we go into that game having lost 2 matches at home, and bearing in mind the atmosphere, I don't know if you'd agree, Matt, I think the atmosphere at Goodison for the early afternoon kickoffs at 12 o'clock is never anything like it is for the evening games or the 3 o'clock games. So I could see that maybe, if you were to concede an early goal, that the atmosphere could actually start to work against the team. So it's a really fascinating kind of week coming up for Everton here. And I definitely think they need to come to Goodison Park with something to show the fans that they've worked on the away form. And one final point on the away form, isn't it bizarre that last season we won about 11 away games when there were no fans present? But this season, when the fans are present again, the away form capsizes. And that does raise questions about the resilience and mentality of established first team players. And these aren't novices. Michael Keane has somehow managed to impress 5 different Everton managers that he's the regular centre back choice. He obviously was doing something that I don't see. I just think we need to get at least 1 away point this week. 2 would be brilliant, but the key thing is not to lose to Burnley.
Well, you said there about the us against the world spirit, and that's obviously what the latter stages of the Newcastle game gave you in spades, wasn't it, with the circumstances of what happened. It'll be interesting whether that's maintained when you're back at home, given you've got a couple of games to go before it. But you talk about the squad and the quality there, Paul. Like, it does seem a bit short in some areas. But, overall, as an outside observer, far too good to be in the position that it's actually in, because there is quality there. But the defence, you mentioned Michael Keane, and when I've jotted down here, is an accident waiting to happen. He reminds me of Titus Bramble in that way, from my own past. There was obviously the Lucas Digne situation, sold a day or two before a change of manager, which was weird, though I guess Mikulenko had already arrived by that point. I don't know how much that mitigates. Overall, the defence doesn't fill me with confidence as someone who doesn't watch them regularly. I can't imagine it inspires you guys watching it too often. But further forwards, there is quality there. But when it's been missing, as it has been at times this year, like Calvert-Lewin missing, Richarlison, I think, earlier in the year as well, the backup options don't seem to be up to it to me. Salomon Rondon, I enjoyed him at Newcastle a few years ago, but that was a few years ago. He's not really with it now. Where do you see the squad overall lacking, Matt?
Everywhere. It's as much as I'd like to sit here and say there's really good options in the squad, there isn't. And you're not 17th in the Premier League table if you've got a good squad. This is an average squad now, and it's full of players that either aren't good enough and don't have a good enough attitude, aren't good enough and maybe have an okay attitude, or are good enough and have a bad attitude. It's full of those sorts of players. And you know, you mentioned there about the situation involving Luka Dean and Mikhailenko in January, and that, I think that 2 months, and I know we're going to come to speak about the wider Everton picture a bit later, but that 2 month spell, which saw Marcel Brands leave, saw Luka Dean leave, saw Mikhailenko come in, saw Patterson come in, and saw Benitez ultimately leave, just sums up the dysfunction in Everton entirely. And this squad is just, it's so lopsided now. And you can go back to January and you can look at this Everton squad now and say, where are the positions that they're really crying out for quality in? And where are they desperate for? And they're desperate for, as Paul mentioned, a deep-sitting, holding midfielder who can break up play. And they are absolutely desperate for a centre-back as well. Forgive me, my dog's just got a squeaky toy under the table there. It's not just me panicking about Everton. But because they signed Anwar El Ghazi on loan from Aston Villa in a deal that was just bizarre, and even Rafael Benitez didn't want to happen, that in itself has took up one of the loan spaces they could have. They could have potentially got one of those players in. And instead, they brought in Van der Beek, an attacking midfielder, and Dele Alli, an attacking midfielder, into a position in the squad where they'd already added El Ghazi, who's an attacking midfielder, and they've got Gray, they've got Iwobi, they've got Anthony Gordon, they've got Andros Townsend as well. So the squad is weak everywhere. And as much as they've got one good centre-back in Yerry Mina, I'd say. You know, and when he plays, they look a completely different team because he's experienced, he's a leader at the back, he's a magnet to the ball, and he's sensitive to danger. But any other centre-back playing without him, and it just crumbles to bits. And as much as he might be coming back in the next couple of weeks, and that is a boost for Everton, in the same breath, he's so unreliable and fit in terms of his fitness. And you can't build a defence around the lad. He's not going to be there for much of the season. So, yeah, to put it bluntly, everywhere we are really short.
Paul, Matt mentioned there about obviously a couple of high-profile loan signings that Everton made in January. So Dele Alli, Donny van der Beek. Matt's talked well there about how, you know, they're in roles or positions that you didn't necessarily need, or at least weren't the priority given other arrivals. They seem to have just turned up, I don't know, for their name rather than much of a plan, almost. Are they a symptom, do you think, of the overall bad recruitment that's gone on for a while?
I think in a word, yes. that's simple answer to that one. I think there's been question marks over Everton's recruitment, you know, for a number of seasons now in the Moshiri regime. I'll come back to that in a second. Just come back to what you said there, you know, about where the squad's weak at the moment. I mean, the lack of creativity is a real worry for me at the moment. We saw Dina, who was our most creative defender. We saw James Rodriguez, who's our most creative midfielder. And we've not been able to play Sigurdsson all season, who's our most goal-scoring midfielder. So we kind of lost a trio of players there who would have made quite an impact if they'd been allowed to play this season. And the loss of Dina has been catastrophic, particularly to replace him with Mikhailenko, who does not look ready any shape or form for the Premier League at the moment. And defensively, I think as Matt outlined there, you know, we miss Yerry Mina, but you can't rely on him. He never seems to run more than 4 or 5 games together. So, you know, we did need a reliable centre-back to come in January. And the decision to relieve Benitez towards the end of the January transfer window, which effectively gave Lampard about 3 days to kind of, you know, try and make some decisions about recruitment-wise, just shows the catastrophic nature of the administration in the Moshiri years. I mean, from my perspective, Benitez should have gone after the Derby game. That was the ideal moment to make that change, bring a new manager in, give them all the January window to look at the recruits, assess the side and make the changes. But, you know, if you look at the current squad as well, I mean, obviously, after all I said about Alex Iwobi, he goes and scores that goal against Newcastle United, which makes it doubly frustrating because there's obviously a talented footballer in there somewhere. It's just not often the guy we've seen the Everton shares at the weekend. You look at some of the other signings. I mean, Cenk Tosun, the mystery man at Goodison Park, you know, who was, you know, I always go on about Cenk Tosun, love doing this, which is why Matt's laughing. But, according to my sources at my local Turkish barbers, they said the reason why he doesn't get a look in is because Duncan Ferguson hates him. And that's why he doesn't get picked week in, week out. So how true that is, I have no idea.
I can tell you why he doesn't get a look in, Paul. It's not because of that.
He's just
not very good at footy.
But the question is he any worse than Salomon Rondon?
Probably not. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about a low bar there, aren't we?
We're sort of like the lowest limbo bar possible, aren't we? Yeah. But, yeah, it's so. I think, you know, there's a number of weaknesses in the team. I think what worries me greatly is the lack of strength of depth. That, you know, we seem to be a side where if Calvert-Lewin goes missing, we can't score goals. If Damari Gray goes missing because he's injured, we don't create anything. If Yerry Mina is injured, the defence falls apart. The only player this season who I think his performances have lived up to standard is Jordan Pickford, who I think had a good season in goal for Everton. But for the rest of the side, if you were asked to name an Everton player of the season, that's a really, really tough call at the moment because there's no obvious standout candidate at all who come to mind. And you do worry if we have strength and depth to get us safety this season. That is the big concern. And I think the resilience of the squad, it has to be called into question. But, I mean... this season has come about because of the poor strategy, the poor leadership of the club for the last 4 to 5 seasons. I don't think hand on heart any Everton fan in August thought we'd be in a better case to struggle. But once the Benitez empire started to crumble and that losing run became embedded in the team, and I just worry lots of players having this mindset that if you go a goal down, well, they kind of give up because you don't see any way back. And that's a real concern for the remainder of the season.
That's what it felt like in the away end on Sunday at Selhurst Park. It was very much like Everton started, even though Everton had started the game well and were the best side for 20 minutes, it wasn't a case of, oh, we'll get back into this and we'll start, you know, rebuilding again and we'll start putting them under pressure again. As soon as that first goal went in, it was like things broke down. And you know, Everton at the moment, I'm sure you've both seen it, Everton had basically, during that tweet that Manchester United put out in 2013 when Moyes was the manager, and it said David Moyes says Manchester United must improve in a number of areas, including passing, creating chances and defending. That's Everton. You know, they conceded 4 away at Palace, they conceded 5 away at Spurs, they were levered by Southampton, they conceded 3 away at Newcastle, and they haven't scored in 6 of the last 7 meetings against top-flight opposition. You know, that's where they are at the moment. They are poor across the board, unfortunately.
And Matt, just go back to what you said there as well. I mean, the one thing about the away games is that there's been a pattern, hasn't it? I mean, Newcastle, we started well, scored the first goal and then collapsed. Southampton started well, conceded the first goal, then collapsed. Tottenham started well, conceded the first goal, then collapsed. And you just think for these players, that they get to the 20-minute mark and the goal down, then the game's over from our point of view.
I can't let your Jordan Pickford comment slide, Paul, without noting how we as Newcastle fans love it when he turns up against us, because this poor Sunderland lad goes to pieces against us. He gets too excited.
I felt sorry for that lad in the T-Rex costume at Goodison. he already, and he didn't even play Jordan, did he?
As soon as I saw Begovic in goal, I thought, well, okay, you've got this one. You've got it. Anyway, let's get on to the managers then. So we've mentioned Benitez a little bit. But overall, I mean, over the last few years, there's been something of a managerial merry-go-round. You know, it's a fairly regular change. This season began with Benitez in charge, of course. Now, obviously, for Evertonians, he comes with a certain amount of baggage, understandably so. And perhaps, I guess, that would mean patience wouldn't last when results turned bad. The odd thing is, I guess, his tenure actually began quite positively, which is strange to think, given how sour and how bad it went quite quickly. But, you know, his record at the start was actually better than Ancelotti's the year before, marginally so. How much, though, was he to blame for the failings of the terrible run of form that saw him sacked, or how much was he a victim, as we've been talking about, of the overall chaos and lack of plan?
I mean, I don't think you can say anything other than it was an awful appointment. And I think any Evertonian could have told you it was going to be an awful appointment. And anyone who's watched any kind of Premier League football to any kind of regular level knew how this was going to end up. And, you know, I going back to the summer now, and I remember when, you know, me and Paul were speaking about it on shows, and I think we would have a similar mindset where we could both say that, you know, the Liverpool thing is something that we were all happy to park to one side and say that, you know, for us, that's not going to be a factor. You know, if Jurgen Klopp became available or Brendan Rodgers became available, at that point, his stock's maybe fallen a bit now. You'd say, oh, yeah, get them in, of course. You know, the really good managers. But I think the concerns I had over him were obviously been out the Premier League for a long time now, and the style of football felt a little bit dated and wasn't really akin to what Everton fans want to see at Goodison Park. But, you know, as you mentioned there, Aidan, the thing is that as much as we could park the Liverpool thing when we sat in August when no football's being played and, you know, you're not losing 5-2 at home to Watford and you're not losing 3-2 at home to Brighton, when those things happen, it, you know, people do get emotional about it because football's an emotional game and it you know, it emotionally affects all of us. So I think that was where that's where it started to really unravel. But it felt like it went exactly as it was always going to. You know, in the summer, we looked at that Merseyside derby fixture in December and went, the Reds are going to come to Goodison Park, they're going to be 2-0 up after 20 minutes and they're going to be singing his name. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it all played out exactly as we all knew it would. Benitez ultimately, I think, is a symptom of the dysfunction at the top of the football club, because everyone knew it wasn't going to work, seemingly apart from one fella, and that's Farhad Moshiri. And he went, not only did he appoint him to begin with, he doubled down on it by sacking Marcel Brands. He tripled down on it by selling Luca Dean, and then he quadrupled down on it by getting rid of the medical team, which Benitez wasn't happy with either. So he got rid of all these really important people at the football club. And then when we got beat by Norwich, he got rid of Benitez as well. So effectively, it was Farhad Moshiri standing there on a pile of rubble going, what on earth's happened here? I've not really got much of a football club left. So Benitez was a terrible manager. It was a terrible appointment, but I'm more prone to point the finger at the fella who appointed him and stuck with him and then binned him off than the man himself.
Okay, well, let's look at the new guy then, Frank Lampard. So when he took over, Everton were 16th and 6 points off the relegation zone. Now, he's 17th and 3 points off the relegation zone. There have been positives, of course, wins over Brentford, Leeds and Newcastle. And as you were mentioning, wins against those in and around you are the things that could well save Everton. So they may be the salvation, particularly if you can add a win against Burnley. But there's obviously been poor results, poor performances too, as we've already mentioned. Any honeymoon period looks to have long gone. Has his arrival been positively received, though, by Everton, beyond the fact that he simply isn't Benitez and doesn't have those associations and the poor football, etc., that you talked about there? Is he of sufficient calibre, capability to handle a club of Everton scale in the current predicament, given what he's done before? And I guess the follow-up to that is, was Lampard lucky to get a job of this standing, given what he's done before? Matt?
I mean, I think you can frame all of that by looking at where Everton are at the moment, ultimately, and that is a club up until... In fact, I think still it applies that even with that win against Newcastle, over the course of the last, you know, half a season or 20-odd games, have been the worst team in the league for that longer period. And when you are that poor, and when you look at the top of the football club and think, oh my word, what's going on there? You know, your pool of managerial options that people are going to be happy with is going to shrink and shrink and shrink. And, you know, listen, I would have liked to have seen Everton maybe go for someone like Lucien Favre, who's got a bit more experience, you know, reputation for work with young players, et cetera, et cetera. Niko Kovac was someone who was available as well. I would have liked to have seen him explore that option. But the club seems to zero in very quickly on three candidates in Duncan Ferguson, Vitor Pereira, who went on a mad one and phoned up Sky Sports, didn't need to do his own job interview to himself, and Frank Lampard. And I think from that point on, everyone sort of went, well, of those three, it feels like Lampard's the best option. But it's, I think his appointment in the main is, I think it's made people feel better about the club. I think the atmosphere has improved in the home games at Goodison Park, certainly. And there's been more of a willingness to get behind the team and get behind the manager. But I think it would be fair to say there's been quite a lot of naive moments from Lampard as well. You know, going away to Tottenham Hotspur and playing a high line against probably the two best counter-attacking players in the league was a bit of a yikes for me. Going to Crystal Palace and playing a three-man defence and effectively having 20 yards of space either side of Michael Keane again was one of them, I thought. Not really sure what he's doing there. And there's just been a few signs that, you know, after the Palace game, as much as like I didn't mind coming out and calling out the players, he started doing this thing recently where he's like, well, these issues were here before I got here. These are problems that predated my arrival, et cetera, et cetera. And you just one of them, you just go, you know, you start to go, you know, you've said this a few times now. You know, it's that it starts to wear thin a little bit, but you know, he says all the right things. He conducts himself in the right way, but ultimately, it's got to all be about results now on the other side of the international break. And I don't know if Paul agrees, but it feels like there's a few people just sort of on the precipice with Lampard now. You know, everyone's been fully behind him, ready to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I think that FA Cup exit and the way, you know, that game went and what happened at the end of the game that day, it feels like there's maybe a section of the fan base that will be ready to turn if things continue to go badly against West Ham and Burnley.
Yeah, I think that'll be the case, unfortunately, Matt, which were, well, I was trying to make the point before that, you know, if he were to lose those next two away games, then go down to an early goal against Man United on Saturday, it's gonna. I can see the crowd, you know, starting to make their feelings towards the manager quite clear. I mean, one of the things that to kind of give me a bit of reassurance here, and I might be being incredibly naive, is Paul Clemens on the coaching staff, isn't he? Now, Paul Clemens is acknowledged as one of the leading coaches, you know, if not just in England, in Europe, you know. And I keep reading that Lampard hasn't got the experience of managing a relegation team, which he hasn't. But Paul Clemens had. He was in charge of Swansea and pulled them off the bottom of the Premier League to a comfortable mid-table position before it kind of didn't go as well the following season. So he's got people in the backroom staff there who obviously have an idea of what's required to stay in the Premier League. So, you know, I'm assuming that he listens to them. Because I think, as you said, Matt, so some of the tactics have just been incredibly naive. And I hate to say it again, reminiscent of Mike Walker in his heyday at Goodison Park. You know, going to ground, taking on, you know, a team who can hit you on the counter side, but not planning to deal with that. So that is definitely a worry for me. I think one of the things with Lampard is, he's good at handling the media. I think that's his strength. But I think, as we indicated before, the kind of mixed message coming out now. And when he starts using the same statements that Benitez used, because Benitez used to always say, "But I've inherited a poor situation here. It's not all my fault." And Lampard's almost repeating that same mantra as well. And I don't know how the mind of a professional footballer works, but if you've got two managers both telling you that you've been a poor player for a number of seasons, then it must be quite difficult to change your mindset and go out there and give the performance. Now, you can't hope the players, you know, when they come off the Manchester United game, would have been boosted by the Newcastle performance, which atmosphere-wise and everyone pulling in the same direction-wise, it's the best it's been for a long, long time at Goodison Park. And you can almost see there how much we're going to miss Goodison Park when we move to the new stadium, because I think the Goodison Park factor is something that keeps up. And I think we're going to have two more nighttime midweek games against Leicester and against Crystal Palace. Now, two wins there, 6 points there, you know, and the pitch looks you know, much more optimistic. But I think what we're all dreading is having to go to Arsenal on the final game of the season, needing to get something to steal, because that is just the absolute nightmare scenario. And we really hope, and of course what makes it worse, because Arsenal are the only team who've been long enough in the top division for them to send us down, the certain irony in that, isn't it, which I would not want to be on the receiving end of. So it's going to be, you know, interesting if the crowd sticks with Lampard. I think you mentioned before there, Aidan, you said one thing he's got in his favour, the credit he's got, is that he's not Benitez. Yeah, and that's true. And he's got to use that. And I think, you know, as Matt indicates there, most fans, given the field that was made available, the selection, would have quite welcomed Lampard's appointments. And I think as well, the sad reality now is that, you know, Carlo Ancelotti apart, when an Everton job comes up, we're no longer in the position to attract the big name managers anymore, unfortunately, because we're not in Europe. We've got a basket case chairman who, if any manager is doing this, research would think twice about signing up for. So, you know, there has to be kind of, you know, wholesale changes across the whole leadership levels of Everton, you know, because at the moment the club's dysfunctional from top to bottom, and that's never a recipe for success.
Yeah, I think Paul's right there in regards to the top of the football club, but I think what Lampard's got to do now, I think, after the break is find a system and stick to it and give players a chance to build relationships with players around them and find some cohesion. Because you go through his games, you know, first game against Brentford, 3-4-3. The win against Leeds was 4-4-2. We played 4-3-3 against Manchester City. We played a 3-4-3 at the weekend. You know, he's changed it pretty much every single week, and I appreciate he's not been helped out by injuries to people like Mina and Godfrey, and obviously the suspension to Allen at the weekend. But it feels like every single week it's a new lads playing in a different system in close proximity to each other. You know, if you want Anthony Gordon and Vitaly Mykolenko to build up a relationship, you're not going to get that by playing them for half an hour here or 20 minutes there. You know, you need to get them a few games to do it. And that's not ideal, of course, in Everton's current predicament when time is not really of the essence and they've got to get results very quickly. But it feels like that's sort of going to be the only option because they're not getting results anyway at the moment. So he's in a really difficult situation. But I think this break now and the time to work with the vast majority of the squad and look at them and look at the fixtures coming up, I think he needs to do two things. I think he needs to get real about the style of football this team can play, because they can't play expansive, out from the back, passing football, certainly away from home. They are not good enough, they are not confident enough, and they haven't got the bottle to do it. And he also needs to find a system to stick with and give players a chance to build some kind of chemistry between each other. Because this chopping and changing every week, throwing stuff at the wall to see what's sticking, isn't really working.
Should things go badly over the next few games, will Lampard even see the season out?
Yeah.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Everton are just we're close to being in that Sunderland, Aston Villa, QPR, Newcastle crisis club mode, where you'd look on it as an outsider and think, oh my word, what is going on at that football club? How can you make so many mad decisions throughout the course of the season? And we feel like we're on the precipice of that, if not necessarily being there. So, you know, it honestly wouldn't surprise me, but. No, I think in all likelihood, as Paul mentioned, he will be there, yeah.
But I think, talking about team selection matter, I don't know what you think, but I'm still trying to work out what the role of Dele Alli is, or does he have a role at the club? Because to me, Dele Alli, when he's come on this season, has been, and ever since we've been brought on for the last 20 minutes of a game, when we've been chasing the match, and that's clearly not his style of football. And I kind of watch some games, look at our lack of creativity and think, why not just start the guy from the beginning of the match, see how it works out, see if you can create anything. If it doesn't work out, then go back to a more defensive midfield formation. But I just think to have somebody like him, who's obviously a very, very good footballer, and expect them to come on for the last 20 minutes when we're chasing the game to change it to me just seems a total misuse of what he can bring to the side. And unlike you, Matt, if we sack Lampard in the summer, it just wouldn't surprise me. Nothing that Mr. Mascheri does in terms of management selection surprised me in the least. And the worrying thing from an Everton fans' point of view is when you think about it, our most successful manager in recent times, league position-wise, is still Sam Allardyce. And that really is a shocking indictment of where we are at the moment.
Well, let's get on to the leadership then. You described it as a basket case, chairman and leadership. So some numbers for you. Since Farhad Mashiri bought Everton, took over in 2016, there's been spending of more than £500 million, depending on sources. Some say more than £600 million on new signings. As well as a number of these players failing to deliver, they've also seen seven coaches in that time. So Martinez, Koeman, Allardyce, as you mentioned there, you're most successful. Silva, Ancelotti, Benitez, and now Lampard. Everton, according to what I've seen on various sources, still have the seventh highest wage bill in the Premier League, but it's a long time since it played at that level. It's not that long ago. There's another popular football podcast that describes seventh place as the Everton Cup, because Everton used to finish there so regularly. Well, you wouldn't call it that now, obviously. There's been investment, but bad investment in a number of cases. And I think, at the risk of lighting blue touch paper, and you've mentioned some of this already, Matt, but is this due to the lack of direction, the overall lack of a plan? I read something where one of your former managers, and it was anonymous, so I don't know which, he'd observed that Mashiri, he's unclear in his own mind what the plan is, and he's too reactive to shifting ideas of fan and media opinion, which obviously can skew one way or the other, depending on what has just happened. So it's this sort of spiral of negativity that they're locked into as a result. Do you think that's fair? And without this clear vision, is there any hope longer term?
Well, it's at the moment you'd say no, because Everton have been in terminal decline for a while now, and it's obvious that something drastic needs to change if this club is to avoid being in the Championship next season, or even, you know, if they stay up this year and the season's coming. But I think with Mashiri, it's difficult because I don't think the intentions or the lack of, you know, I don't think the intentions have ever been anything but good. I don't think the ambition has been anything but high, but it's obviously just been applied in an absolutely ludicrously, unfathomably bad way. And I think he's obviously been at the top of the football club, and his shareholdings has increased gradually over the course of those 6 years to the point now where I think he owns in excess of 90% of the football club. So this is very much his ship now. But what he's done is he's brought people in. And I'm thinking primarily here about someone like Marcel Brands. He brought him in on a three-year deal as the director of football and effectively wouldn't let the fella really do his job properly. So Marcel Brands effectively was a bit of a bastardised director of football in the sense that he had the title, but he was on the board, which is peculiar for a director of football. He wasn't really allowed to pick the manager. I think he had an input in picking managers, but he wasn't the person who made the final choice. He didn't really have a say on the managers, you know, keeping managers and sacking managers. You know, I think it's well documented that Brands wanted to keep Marco Silva even when things were going pretty badly for him, but that was ultimately a decision made by Farhad Moshiri. And Moshiri was someone who brought in plays as well, as we've seen with El Ghazi, you know, someone who Benitez reportedly didn't want, but has got the player himself has got very close links to Kia Jirabachan, who is, of course, a well-known confidant of Farhad Moshiri, and he ended up at the football club, and here we are. So I think what he needs to do going forward is to bring people in who know what they're doing in regards to football, who've got proven experience, a proven track record. You know, spend money on them, give them big wages, you know, get high profile people in. But he needs to take a step back and say, get on with your job. You know, I trust you enough and I'm paying you enough money because I believe in what you can do. I'm not going to interfere now. But that's not what he's not been able to do that as the years have sort of gone on. And if anything, he's probably more involved now with footballing matters than he was 6 years ago when he first came to the club. So it's a bit of a mess, to be honest. And I think the stadium is obviously the one major positive thing here that he's been able to do. You know, going back 6 years ago, if someone had said to me that Everton were going to be in a position where they're building a stadium down on the waterfront, I wouldn't have believed you. I wouldn't have thought that was possible. You know, the club have done absolutely everything right in regards to that. And fingers crossed, if they stay in the Premier League, it's going to be one of the best arenas in the top flight. But from a footballing perspective, everything else, it's been a disaster. But the worrying thing is that it doesn't really feel like he's learning from it. You know, he's still signing players recommended to him by agent friends. He's still making madcap appointments like Benitez in the summer, despite, you know, everybody else we believe in the football club saying this is not going to end well. So, yeah, it's tricky. His intentions are good. He's obviously got the cash and he's obviously come out and funded Everton with capital and he's helped clear the club's debt. But, you know, what good's that if you're going to piss away £500 million on, like you mentioned there, Aidan? So I think for me, if he's not going to sell the football club, which I don't see him doing in the summer, I think he needs to put trust in the people he appoints. He needs to clear the decks in regards to leadership off the pitch and put faith in them to go and do the job and you know, go and sit on his yacht in Monaco and just chill out for a bit and let those people get on with the job.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, you go back to what you're saying there as well. I mean, you love Moshiri's decision-making. And remember, there used to be a series on BBC about 15, 20 years ago where they brought in an outside consultant to work with an industry and show where they were going wrong and showing them what they had to do to improve and give them recommendations. You almost sound like Moshiri needs an outside football consultant with a business background to come and say, look, this is how you run a football club. This, you know, this is the level of decision making that you need. These are the executives you need to appoint, these responsibilities you need to give, because it just seems a totally incoherent jumble at the moment. And I think we mentioned on the Blue Room, I think a while ago, Matt, that you know, what one of my neighbours on the street here, you know, write to the Athletic, and he told me that, you know, when Moshiri was appointed, that the word on the street was he's like a kid in the sweet shop. He was like Tony Hernandez when he first started over QPR. You know, you could sell him, you'd buy anything without thinking about the consequences. And also, interestingly, he also mentioned that when he first took charge of Everton, because of his Arsenal connections, the first person he went to for advice was David Dean, who then recommended he work with Rick Parry, ex of Liverpool. So initially, know, a lot of his advice coming from Rick Parry as well. So for someone who's such a successful businessman, and if you look at the Sunday Times rich list, despite all the money he's given Everton, he's not gone down in the rich list in 3-4 years. He's always hovering about 112, 113. So he's making money off the club as well. He's not losing money despite his investment. But you do wonder, you know, with the way he's led the football club, you do wonder how he's become a successful businessman. It just seems that football ownership does crazy things to quite rational men who are good at making decisions, hard decisions. But you know, I think, you know, we've got a structure of the club at the moment that doesn't inspire any confidence at any level in any sector of the club at all. And I've gotten to the arms of a few people who said, well, what would we do with Mascherano? And well, we'd get another buyer because lots of people want to buy into football clubs. It's not exactly, you know, even Derby County got people looking to buy into them at the moment. So we wouldn't have a problem with that. So you know, I think both for Frank Lampard and for Fahad Mascheri, next season, if we stay up, is crucial because we can't go through this same scenario again next season where, you know, suddenly you mentioned 7th being the new Everton Cup, Aidan. Well, and with the 17th is going to be the new Everton Cup in the season to come unless you make some drastic changes to the way the club operates. And it's you know, when you think, you know, the decline of... I know we're not the only club in this situation, but for the amount of money we've spent, the decline relative to the money we've spent has been quite precipitous. And you know, I really despair that if Mascheri keeps interfering with managerial decisions, if he keeps listening to his agent as opposed to his manager, if he keeps being a director of football but not letting them be a director of football, then things are not going to improve overnight. And you just kind of hope that this coming so close to relegation this season might be a bit of a wake-up call for him and might just make him realise that he's got to start listening to people who actually know what they're talking about.
I used to think that about Mike Ashley, Paul.
he might be taking over Derby, mightn't he, Aidan?
I mean, Paul mentioned there about the recruitment. I mean, that's the worst spell of recruitment in football history, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, no one has spent £500 million and got so little for their investment. No, it's unfathomably bad, as I said earlier. You know, and Paul's right. You know, Everton have got a new director of football in, and Kevin Fellwell, who I imagine will be doing work, and you know, now with the summer in mind. But what use is that? Is if you know, if Mascheri says to Lampard, you know, you bring in your what players you want, Frank. Never mind the director of football. Yeah. Or if Kiersey Rabushin's on in his ear going, do you know what, far lads? You know, that Al Ghazi was boss, wasn't he? Yeah. I've got another cracking winger for you. You can have in the summer. But you know, it's. Everton are, you know, as much as this is really bad on the pitch in regards to the team as well, the finances, and I'm not a big finance guy, you know, there are other places you can go to find out more about this when it comes to Everton, but they've had to postpone sponsorship deals with obviously two major, you know, backers in Megafon and Yotta because of what's going on in Russia and Ukraine at the moment. So that, of course, is going to, you know, have fiscal issues for them. But also, the club's accounts are going to come out again this week, I believe. It might even be out by the time people listen to this podcast. And it looks like they're going to show another £100 million loss for Everton, which is, I think, for the fourth year in a row. They've lost that kind of money. In terms of FFP, they're up against the wall, as was evidenced by the fact that they could only sign Damari Gray for £1.25 million in the summer. And in January, they could only spend what they brought in from the sale of Luka Dean and Mikalenko and Patterson. And as you mentioned, they've spent £500 million. They're trying to build a stadium. Apparently, they've secured financing for that, so that's a good thing. But, you know, a new £500 million facility the club's got to pay for is going to be a heavy burden on them as well. So these figures are adding up and up and up. And if they don't get it right in regards to the summer, in regards to the finances, if they don't stay in the Premier League, then all of a sudden, that financial black hole is just becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's going to be really, really difficult for the club to sort of fill that.
Well, to finish things off then, before we wind up, a few quicker questions for you both. Obviously, you've mentioned already about how Everton flirted with relegation in the 90s and just survived on a very dramatic final day, and you know, whether it'll come down to that again, we'll see. But can Everton fall? Can they get themselves out of it this year, or is the best hope simply there'll be three worse teams?
Certainly, I think we're all fairly hoping that the three worst teams are in the Premier League. But I think realistically, I mean, if you're trying to be naively optimistic here, we're still not in the bottom three. There's still a gap of a couple of points between us and Watford. Our fate's still in our own hands. You know, we've got to go to Burnley, we've got to go to Watford. You know, they are two matches where if we were to take some from those two games, that puts us in a far stronger position. We've still got four games at home, so that once again gives you some hope. I've been in contact with a couple of Burnley fans. They're just like, don't worry, mate, we're hopeless. We're going down. We're even worse than you. So that was quite reassuring to hear from their perspective. I really don't want to jinx this or to curse this, but I mean, I've lived through the 93-94 relegation season, and I always felt that year that team was too good to go down and would come straight back up. I've lived through the 97-98 season. That team should have gone down. They deserved to go down and would never come back up. That team was so poor. I think this team is in between those two levels at the moment. And I can see grounds for optimism in terms of the players we've got, who you think injury-wise, you know, DCL, Demarai Gray come back from injury, Yerry Mina might add some strength to the team to keep us up. On the other hand, the team is so flaky when they can see the goal. It doesn't inspire any confidence that you know, they go away from home and go down. If you're an Everton away fan, you might as well go and look for the turnstiles at 3:15 if I'm near his pub, because you know the game's over. Go and watch Sky Sports with Jeff Stelling instead. So you just kind of think, hand on heart, I think we can get to 35 points. I think 35 points gives us a good chance of staying up. And I'm not going to jinx it or curse anybody beyond that.
And Matt, how about you? And a glance at Everton's remaining fixtures seems to be a cross between really tough teams near the top and several in and around you. So as Paul says, it's very much in Everton's hands, but will they do it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll go to Anfield and smash Liverpool and rock up at West Ham at the weekend and lever them as well. But I think they'll just have enough. And I think my big concern is those two away games at Watford and at Burnley, because it's not just... I can't sit here looking at Everton's away record and say that I think they're going to win either of those games or get anything. You know, it'd be very naive of me to say that. So if we went there and lost, it'd be the boost that we'd give to those teams potentially as well. What I think is going to be difficult for them is going to any away games and getting any kind of points. But I think the games Paul mentioned there in regards to Leicester, in regards to Crystal Palace, maybe United as well. You may see a sneaking a draw in that one. I think they might just be able to cobble together enough points to stay afloat in the table. But it's gonna be tight. And you know, as Paul said, the nightmare scenario is going down to Arsenal on that last day, thinking we need to get something here, and they're going for the Champions League. And it's gonna be very, very tricky. But I think they'll just squeak through. But you know, whatever happens, if Everton gets 35 points and we stay up on the last day and there's a big pitch invasion, doesn't matter. Still going to be mass introspection this summer at the football club, and loads of changes and loads of things need to happen to make sure that Everton are not in this position again.
Well, you're absolutely right about the boost for the other teams. That's what happened to Newcastle in January, of course, is the win over Everton was the start of a good run. So if they do survive, then you're talking about changes. If we just think about the managerial, you know, obviously if you survive, then Lampard will presumably survive, but you know, unless there's fundamental changes, can you see happening to him? What happened to Benitez this year? You know, he gets binned off halfway through after another poor run.
Oh, it will happen unless there's changes at the top of the football club and the recruitment policy is completely overhauled. We'll be sat here in this situation again next year, if not worse, because it's there's no joined up thinking with it. You know, as we said, you know, you can't sell Luca Dean, you can't sack your director of football, you can't sack your medical staff, and then sack the fella who you sacked all them for in the space of a month. It's not joined up thinking. So Everton need to get real. They need to give somebody you know, autonomy over making the decisions and set a constant thread throughout the football club. If they don't do that, more muddled thinking will lead to poor performances. And like I said, this terminal decline that Everton are on will continue unless there are wholesale changes at the top of the football club.
Any final thoughts, Paul? A bit of positivity to end on?
Well, I'd agree with Matt. I think that to me, the issue often boils down to Fadman Show in particular seems to have a very short-term view of what football success looks like, and reacts quite drastically and almost impetuously to short-term spells of failure. I mean, looking back at the Marco Silva era, you know, yeah, I can see there was a case for maybe giving the lad a bit longer because we weren't in danger going down this season. We're quite comfortable mid-table. Okay, we just hit a rocky patch, but most teams hit a rocky patch. It doesn't always mean you've got to press the destruct button, which I think Mascheri does. And I think Mascheri, when he first took over at Everton, when he appointed Ronald Koeman, his phrase was, "I wanted a Hollywood manager to rival Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klinsmann." I still think he's got this Hollywood manager mindset in his thinking, and he kind of thinks that, you know, he wants someone, I think, to come in and change the club instantly. And the problems at Everton are so endemic that it can't be changed instantly. You know, I mean, Klopp's been given us 6-7 years at Anfield to turn them into the team that they are, you know, and the club stuck by him. Now, I remember since the phone-ins on local radio, where people demanded Klopp be sacked because he wasn't good enough, you know, all these crazy responses you get. But you can imagine Mr. Mascheri listens to phone-ins like that and makes some decisions based on what he's heard from some lunatic who never... wouldn't you know what good support was anyway.
Paul, in the past, he's rang them up, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. And isn't that a worry when the club owner gets involved in debates like that, you know? I mean, do you remember Frank Lampard bringing up Talk Sport once? But when he's being criticised about his parenting, divorced from his wife, and he had to go to the presenters about that. So there's maybe a pattern developing there as well. I mean, maybe we should give him Pereira the job after all, because I don't know about you, I thought he interviewed one of those guys, but...
Well, we'll all soon see how the remainder of the season plays out for Everton. But we'll wrap things up there for this evening before the three of us end up taking over the reins of Goodison ourselves. So, Matt, thank you so much for giving us your time this evening, for talking so well about something I'm sure you've talked about more than you wish to already. So thanks very much.
No problem, lads. Cheers.
And Paul, thanks as always.
Thanks, Aidan. It's been a pleasure being on the show. Been great to have a discussion with Matt, because Matt normally hosts the shows, and I'm involved. It's good to hear Matt's opinions as well. And yeah, I hope for non-Everson fans, you found this quite an illuminating listen, because I hope you sense our frustration. Aidan, you know, as a Newcastle fan, you know what we're going through. You know what it's like, you know, and I just hope that, you know, maybe you might be calling us back, you know, in June for the Great Escape podcast version.
We'll do that, Paul. Absolutely. Well, just to wrap it up then, do join us again on These Football Times on our next podcast. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you again next time. Thank you and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.